to the International House of Horrors.
Hello, valued guests, and welcome back to the International House of Horrors podcast, your sanctuary of spooky for all things terrible, horrible, brutal, bloody, gory, and the macabre. I am one of your curators here at the house, Joe Merle.
And I'm the other one. I'm Josh. Hi.
Hello,
Happy Father's Day, Joe.
Thanks. Thank you, sir. It's a, yes, it is Father's Day here over in the States, and I've got all kinds of kids. Well, not all kinds. I've got three kids. But yeah, it's a good, it's always a fun day. Yeah, all over, spreading my seed. It's not even possible anymore for me to spread my seed. But no, the what was I just going to say about? Father's Day is a great day because it's the only day of the year you can literally guilt trip your kids into anything. You could be like, but it's Father's Day. Don't you love your father? Go give me my shoes.
That's awesome. Yeah. Over here, Father's Day was a few weeks ago, and usually it's like, it's, I think, always on a Thursday or something. And so it's usually a day here used to take a trip and just get drunk.
Nice.
all the men take a cart, take their beer, and get drunk on the streets.
Yeah, that sounds all right. It doesn't sound like there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
It's weird, though. I shouldn't say it's weird. I don't know what's weird and what's not. But on a Thursday, because I feel, do people normally work on the Friday after?
There's often they do like a bridge day or something, but people have to work normally, so it always depends.
Yeah, that's fun though. We always learn something new. Always learn something new about Germany every time we talk.
That's the goal of this podcast, isn't it?
Right.
To learn new stuff about Germany.
To learn new stuff about Germany. Welcome to Das German Guys, or Das German Guy. Josh teaches German. It's fun. Let's see, what do we got going on today? Oh, we got to do what we do every time. We got to start. We got what episode are we on? Episode 9, season 1 of The Twilight Zone, directed by Robert Flory and written by Charles Beaumont, who actually wrote the, I was just reading before we started in my companion guide. I actually got a pretty cool story about this one that I was excited they put in this companion book, written by Charles Beaumont, who wrote the script as well. And this one appeared for the first time in Playboy, 1958 issue of Playboy magazine, which, Playboy is not, I don't think they even do any sort of images anymore. Now it's just all stories and articles and things like that. But it's interesting to think about a time when you had like sci-fi stories like this, or weird stories in a Playboy magazine. And
also, you know what else Charles Beaumont wrote? I just looked him up. He also wrote Braindead, not the Peter Jackson one.
But the Bill Pullman and the Bill Paxton? Did he really?
Yeah, he did. That's what IMDb says.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. This stars Richard Conti, I think is how you'd say it. Richard Conti as Edward Hall. John Larch, who actually is going to show up again in The Twilight Zone a couple times, Dr. Elliot Rathman, and Susan Lloyd plays Maya or Miss Thomas, because we have this kind of dual character. And the title of the episode is Perchance to Dream. And this is let's do the opening narration, since we normally start with that, then we can talk about the episode. All right, here we go. Opening narration, episode 9, season 1, The Twilight Zone. 12 o'clock noon. An ordinary scene, an ordinary city, lunchtime for thousands of ordinary people. To most of them, this hour will be a rest, a pleasant break in a day's routine. To most, but not all. To Edward Hall, time is an enemy, and the hour to come is a matter of life and death. And then we open up on the episode, and I really, really like this episode for many reasons. There's so many layers to this thing that I think are great. I think the core story is cool. And we just get this guy, Ed Hall, who we know something's wrong when he's outside the building at the very beginning looking up. and he seems distraught. Real, I love that camera shot too.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I don't even remember what they call it. There's a name for it, but it's, you know, when you're walking and zooming at the same time and you get that kind of dropout effect.
Vertigo shot.
Yeah.
I don't know what the official name is, but it's the one best known for Vertigo where Hitchcock used it.
Yeah, to create those. Really, it is. I tried it once when I was in, I want to say when I first started, my grandmother was amazing and she gave me a video camera when. She had this camera, but then kind of she got a new one and let me adopt this older camera. And I was young and I tried that for the first time and it took me forever to figure out how to do it. Like because there was, you know, I didn't have any books or anything on filmmaking and I was like, how do you get that thing? And then finally I told my brother, I was like, just stand there. And I started walking towards him and zooming out at the same time. I don't remember if it's zoom out, zoom in, but whatever, you walk and zoom at the same time. And we kind of got the effect, you know, it wasn't on a dolly or any kind of rails. So it was shaky a little bit, but I saw that and I thought I was Spielberg, man. I was like, I've done
it. That makes you feel like an actual magician when you do these kind of camera tricks.
I was like, I broke the code. I figured it out. Let's go to Hollywood because I'm going to make it.
We know everything now.
Yeah. So this guy, we open up and he's got this, we realize quick he's, you know, anxious, some sort of anxiety going on. And he's convinced, he goes in to see his psychiatrist, who Dr. Rathman, and he's convinced that if he falls asleep, he's going to die. And that's his big thing. Like, if I fall asleep, something's going to happen to me and I'm going to die. And he even tells him, like, you see that picture on the wall? Like, I can make these pictures move around if I want to with my mind. Like, I've been able to do it since I was a kid. And it's, I love the dream sequences in this movie. Because it, you know, some really weird kind of like Dutch angles, like old Dutch angles, like really bizarre, twisted kind of look at things.
You can see it's a dream right away.
Yeah. I don't know how they put the, it almost seemed foggy most of the time. You know, there was around the frame. So you did know it was a dream. And because he was the carnival the first dream?
That was the second dream. The first dream was him driving around in the night and expecting someone to sit right behind him.
Yeah, that's right. And he's explaining this to the doctor. He's like, I knew there was someone in the backseat of my car. I absolutely knew there was someone there. Yeah, that's the first dream. And then the second dream is the fun house, which I think is a very it was the better of the two dreams. It was really cool. Like the
Although what I liked about the first dream is that it took me out for a second just because it did not feel like the Twilight Zone at all. Everything we've seen so far was always like in these studio lots and like always it always looked kind of similar, and now we got this shot in a car driving at night that looked so completely out of the ordinary for the Twilight Zone that for a second I was like, oh, that's cool, just because it was something different.
Yeah, this one, you're right, it did. And even with the dream sequence at the funhouse, I don't think we've had anything quite that expansive yet with so many different set pieces. You know, and some of it was stock footage. You could tell the difference, you know, between what they had recorded in a stock footage of a roller coaster. But hey, that's how you make a movie. Or make a TV show. And the thing with this is the script is really tight in this one. I feel like there wasn't a wasted word. And it helps that the guy who wrote the story wrote the script. You know, he knows the source material, knows what story he wants to tell. And in the funhouse, though, we get the, what was she, the Catwoman? They called her the something Catwoman. There was a name for it.
Yeah, but I can't remember, Maya.
I just knew her as Maya. She's this carnival dancer who is set up as a cat and trying to lure him in. And we then get back to the office and our boy freaks out. Ed freaks out and jumps out the window.
Well, He says that the doctor can help him, walks out the door, and then sees Maya sitting at the desk.
Oh, that's right,
And that's why he freaks out and then jumps out the window in a great, like, that's typical 50s cinema, where he jumps out of the window, wow! And he does that and dies. But Does he?
Right. And that's where our twist comes in. In reality, you know, the doctor, he goes, because we're like, why isn't this doctor panicking? Because you only see the doctor at first and you think he'd be in a crazy state of panic. But he walks out and he tells her, he's like, hey, Miss Thomas, can you come in here, please? And we see that Ed is actually still on the couch. And he's like, I think he's had a heart attack. Why they weren't trying to give him, you know, I don't know, CPR.
It was still the wrong direction. To the first thing to do is to call in your secretary. Right. Look, I think he's dead.
Right. Not panicking at all.
And I think he even said that he gave one scream. Like, he came in, laid down. That was the first thing he did. And that's what we see in the show as well. We see him come in, lay down for a second. Then the screen fades to black for a second and goes back. And then he's up again and says, like, I can't sleep.
Yeah.
But yeah, then then the doctor at the end says he lay down. And then he just gave one scream and now he's dead. Something
so,
like that.
So we're led to believe that he was asleep the entire time.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Yeah, and I really just, though, the thing that shines for me in this is kind of that impressionistic style of it all. The, you know, you're from Germany. You guys helped create that whole movement.
Yes, yeah. It was awesome.
Yeah. You guys helped do all of that. But really, it makes the funhouse seem super creepy. And I was reading just before we started here that Beaumont, when he wrote this thing, some of the idea was based on, he had gone into a funhouse with his, I think they said it was his brother. It was brother or good friend. And they were on the pier somewhere on a shoreline. And they go into this funhouse as adults. Well, there was some kid outside who was doing the tickets. And the kid had a switchblade and was picking at his nails and stuff and, you know, messing around with this knife. And as they got deeper into the funhouse, Charles, for some reason, his mind, like in his head, he started thinking something terrible was going to happen. And he's like, what if that kid comes in here? Like, that kid knows this place better than us. He could sneak in, kill us both, and nobody would ever know and just brush us off under the pier and nobody would ever find our bodies. And so both of these men started to panic in this funhouse. And he's like, come on, we got to go. We got to go. And he talked about at the end of this, he's like, we went out, we finally found our way out, and the kid was still there picking at his nails with. So it was all in his head. Like, everything was in his mind. I was like, man, it's so fun when you see how life, you know, inspires art with a lot of these people. But he's like, it was true panic in this funhouse. We were losing it. And it was, you know, we get outside and this guy's still there and nothing had changed. But it was a really, really cool episode.
Yeah, it was really well done. The only gripe I have with it is that I don't know if it was because I had seen it before and knew the ending. Well, I didn't know it at first, but once he laid down, it was pretty obvious. The guy who says, I haven't slept forever, I can't sleep right now, that he fell asleep at that moment where he laid down on the couch, because they made it too obvious with the cutting of the scene.
Yeah.
And that is my only gripe, that they kind of gave the twist away very early. But that might be because I had already seen it before. But everything else was really well done.
And it could also be, you know, we have to remind ourselves to try and view this through the lens of 1959, before people were used to twists. And, you know, they took everything for the most part at face value. Now when we watch a lot of movies, I feel like I almost look for it. And, you know, I'm searching through the story. Especially with the Twilight Zone. But who knows? At the time, maybe they didn't see it, or maybe there was a group of people sitting around like, oh, I saw it coming from a mile away.
Yeah,
we'll never truly know. But overall, it's a really fun episode. It's a good time. It's really well done. And just like you said, there's a lot of things that are very different from everything we've seen leading up to this point. So it was good. So the closing narration for the episode goes a little something like this. They say a dream takes only a second or so. And yet in that second, a man can live a lifetime. He can suffer and die. And who's to say which is the greater reality? The one we know, or the one in dreams, between heaven, the sky, the earth, in the Twilight Zone. Yes, that's a fun one. And if you want to prepare for next week episode is titled Judgment Night. And I watched it. I'm going to watch it again before we before we record next week, but I did watch it already once because it's an episode that I absolutely love. Such a good one.
I don't remember it yet, but I think I've seen this as well. But yeah, I made a habit now of watching it on Sunday mornings before we record. So it's always really,
really
fresh,
fresh
in my mind.
Yeah, really fresh.
Because I got the time in the mornings to watch it.
Well, I will tell you, this one has to do with the Germans.
I can't wait.
Yes, this one, one of our many, many episodes that has to do with, you know, post-World War II. And it's, yeah, it's a really good episode, though. It's a ton of fun, and it's one that, well, we'll get to it next week. We'll talk about
we'll
it next week.
We'll get to it. Yeah, it's just in general, we got to say that this show is from 1959, so they were still really close to the Second World War. Like, yeah. This was... Yeah.
So, I mean, you're only talking, you know, and wars end, but feelings about wars reside and hang for quite a few years after. So, yeah, I mean, you're only talking not, you know, 15 years since everything was over. So it was still fresh in a lot of people's minds. And so we are going to deal with a lot of that. And it's I think even if you took that element out of it, it's still a really good episode. It's a cool idea. So main topic of the day. Since it
Wait,
is.
Wait, 1 second.
Oh, yeah.
Before we get into the main topic, I want to do a quick detour because I've watched a movie in cinema a few days ago.
Oh, yes, that's right.
To talk about it for a second. I'm not going to spoil it, not going to talk much about it, but I've been to the cinema and I've seen Ma.
Yes. New
Octavia
Blumhouse.
Spencer.
Yeah.
Yeah, another Blumhouse. Directed by Tate Taylor, who is actually... That was kind of surprising when I found that out. He's best known for The Help and Winter's Bone.
Oh, really? I didn't even know he directed this one.
Yeah, he directed this one. And that's why he got Octavia Spencer, because they're good friends and he helped her to her Oscar, basically.
Right.
And Octavia Spencer plays an older woman. Everyone just lovingly calls her Ma, and she's... throwing parties in her basement for all the teenagers, for all the minors.
Yeah.
And she kind of is crazy. And the movie wasn't bad. It wasn't a shitty movie, but it's not one I'd say is worth checking out in the cinema. I felt like this is a movie that you can, that if it's on Netflix, you see it, you think, oh, I'll check it out. And then you'll enjoy it probably because, yeah, you didn't spend any money on it. You didn't waste your time. But it's a good, fun watch for the site. But, it's got some flaws. But it's got some really gory scenes. So it's got some good
fun
stuff.
And I wonder if the only reason it went to cinema was because of Octavia Spencer being attached to it.
Probably.
Yeah, because the last couple that they put straight to Netflix that Blumhouse just drops out of nowhere. They're like, hey, here's a movie. They haven't been all that great. There's been, and what do you think about this Black Christmas remake that was just announced that's coming out this year?
Oh yes, I've heard of that, and it's probably gonna suck.
Yeah, it's another Blumhouse movie that they, from what I was reading in the article, I think it was on Bloody Disgusting where I read the article. They were, I don't know who they were talking to, if it was the director or the writer. But they said that they're going to be fighters from what it sounded like, which is, you know, I got to thinking about the original Black Christmas and I'm like, in a lot of ways, there was a lot of really strong female characters in that movie. I don't think it was ever a movie where you just had these, you know, wimpy women not doing anything. Margot Kidder was great. Olivia Hussey was, you know, standing up to her boyfriend at the time. We've talked about Black Christmas to death, but... You know, the idea of getting an abortion and saying, you know, I'll do what I want. And I don't want any Billy backstory. I just want it to be, you know, crazy presence in the world. And they also, I guess they caught some heat for not having very many female directors and writers. So they're bringing on some women to helm this thing. I'll give it a shot. I mean, they're going to get my money. I'm going to go see it. So it doesn't matter because it's
Black
Christmas.
Maybe it will be the next Halloween.
Who knows? I don't know. I think what made Halloween so great is you brought back some of the people who did the original. And with Black Christmas, unfortunately, we don't have the ability to, you know, Bob Clark can't come back and do that stuff. So,
yeah.
Anyway, we'll see.
Oh, well, and one more thing. If everything works out, I'm going to see The Dead Don't Die tonight. So I'll probably talk about that one next week because I'm really excited about that one.
Awesome. Yeah, I want to see that real bad. I just haven't had time to see anything. I'm hoping next weekend to, I might have seen Child's Play by the time you and I talk on, because that Child's Play hits on Friday. I don't know if it's the same day over there. Child's Play and Toy Story 4.
I gotta see. Oh yeah, Toy Story 4 as well. But that's not gonna be as much horror.
I don't know. Toy Story 3, the end of that movie with all the toys going down into that fire pit. That was intense. Had me all choked up. Like, please don't die. Please don't die. All the friends. I don't want the friends to die.
that's true. Oh, also on. Maybe that's like I'm on Wednesday. I'm going to a pre-premiere, to a sneak preview, where I'm seeing a movie that's not out over here yet, and I'm really hoping it will be Brightburn, but I don't know yet.
That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. But yeah, so maybe it could be Child's Play. I don't know. Maybe a day early.
Yeah.
Who knows?
That'd be either way. Either one of those movies would be a win.
Yeah, but it's probably going to be like the last time I went to a sneak like that, I saw The Dawn Wall, which is like this climbers documentary by Red Bull.
Yeah, that's which is not as exciting. I mean, it's good from what I've heard, like The Dawn Wall. Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things.
It's really good, especially when you watch the Free Solo, that Oscar-winning documentary, because it's about about similar guys climbing the same exact mountain.
Oh, got it. So it all ties together.
Yeah. But yeah, in general, I hope to see the best, but now we can get into the main topic.
Yes, and the main topic, we decided we would stay on topic, and we were going to go do a Father's Day and talk about fathers in horror. And I was talking to Shayna a little bit about it while we were out and about yesterday, just hanging out, and she was like, are you doing any, you know, like heroic type dads? And for me, I was like, no, I'm going straight killer dads. You know, the worst of the worst, horrible type dad characters. And at first I started just kind of thinking from memory, like, okay, who is there and what have they done? And the more I got into the list, there's actually a pretty extensive list and some really good performances here of some great killer dads. And I have one up first that I think is just amazing. And it's one that you and I had, well, maybe you had seen it. I think you had seen it before I did. And you had told me to watch it, but 1955's Night of the Hunter.
No, we talked about that on the list. I haven't seen that yet at all, but when we did the best horror movies of all time.
Yeah.
That was on there.
Oh, that's right. That's when we talked about it. Was the greatest horror movies of all time. He's a scumbag in the worst way because he's, you know, he's not a horror dad like some of the other ones on here who's a serial killer, but he's more real world, like someone you could actually, and I can't think of his name right now, Robert Mitchum. That's right. And he's got the love and the hate tattooed on his fingers, but he comes into town, and what makes him so scary is he's under the guise of a preacher. You know, he's pretending to be a preacher character. And what he did, I don't think this is spoiling anything for you, but he was in jail with this man who had given some money to he hid this money, and he told his two kids, like, you can't ever tell anyone where it's at. Don't ever tell anyone where the money's at. Dad goes to jail. He's in a cell with Robert Mitchum, and he's trying to convince him to tell him all this stuff. And I think he gets him to talk in his sleep is how he ends up. He doesn't ever really find out, but he finds out about the family. And so he now comes into this family as like and weasels his way into being like a stepfather character, but slowly reveals these really nefarious intentions and has no problem. Like, I'm gonna kill you. I'm gonna kill your mom. I'm gonna kill your brother. I'll kill all of you to get this money. But is still very sweet and charming on the surface at the same time to a lot of the locals in town. It's a great movie. Great movie. I am looking forward.
I really want to see it. And it kind of reminds me in a lot of ways that you talked about just now about the Cape Fear, because I've seen the 60s one, and that sounds kind of similar. So I'm really excited to watch this one. I just got to find it somewhere.
Yeah, it is similar in a lot of ways. And the original Cape Fear is great, but that's one we didn't talk about in remakes that I think is better the, because I mean, it's horror, yes, but it's also psychological thriller in a lot of ways, is how I would kind of classify Cape Fear. But Night of the Hunter from 1955, if there's anyone listening who hasn't seen it, I would really highly encourage to check that movie out, because it is, it's super cool and some great set pieces in that thing.
I'm going to try and see it. The first one I have on my list is kind of a cheat maybe, but I decided I'll just, it was on a few lists, so I put it on here as well. It's The Devil Himself in Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah.
And the same, you could say in The Omen, where it's just like there, the father is literally the devil. It's literally right. Satan.
Yeah, so, which you never really see in either of them. I think in Rosemary's Baby, you see it for a second. Like you see a shadow figure. You see
the eyes, and that's the worst thing about it.
Yeah, you see a shadow type figure, but you know it's the devil. And then,
but in Rosemary's Baby, there is even a point to be made. This is spoilers for Rosemary's Baby, by the way. There is a point to be made about the actual, not the father, but the husband of the woman bearing the child, because he was in this the whole time.
Right.
He's not a killer, but he's still probably one of the worst, not dads, but stepfathers out there.
Yes, because he was willing to give up his wife to bear the seed of Satan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good one, though. That is a good one. The father is the actual devil himself.
Yeah, and I think you can't go much worse than that, but... It doesn't fully count because, yeah.
Yeah, and even in The Omen, you don't ever get, you know, we don't. And I think it's good when people deal with the devil and trying to bring that to screen. It's so difficult because so many different cultures and areas of the world see it as a different thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to read straight biblical text, it would be the most beautiful angel ever seen, is the way most people see it. And then you see other iterations of the goat, you know, a standing goat with horns. And then you have, of course, the pitchfork bearing little red man. So it's hard to do the devil. And I think if it was me, that's why I would go that route and not really spend a lot of time showing it, because you're never going to please anybody no matter what you do. And it's hard. And if you leave it in the shadows, then we as the audience can create whatever we want it to be. We can, you know, project our own mental image of what it looks like onto the screen without being disappointed. Even though I did really like it in The Witch. I like it when the goat starts talking. What was his name? Black Philip.
Black Philip. Yeah, exactly.
When he started talking, the first time I saw that in the theater, I was like, holy shit. Like, this is crazy. This is great. Yeah.
What was I going to say? I had something. Oh yeah. About not showing him. It's also the typical thing of, there's nothing worse than the things you don't show, because then you make up the worst thing you can think of. And no one can draw something that's more scary than what you can make up in your mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more, man.
Yeah.
Next up for me, I've got one of my favorite killer dads. And, well, I guess there could actually be two dads, but I don't really count Grandpa because he doesn't do a whole lot, but... Drayton Sawyer, I don't know, probably every episode of this show we ever do, I'll talk about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre at one point. I'll find some way to tie it in. But Drayton Sawyer is just such a funny character, because he is a killer, but he actually says at the one point, he's like, oh, I don't take no pleasure in the killing. Like, it was never really his thing, but he takes pleasure in sadistic torture of Sally when they're in the gas station together. And he's smacking her with the broom, and then he's poking her. We're in the truck together.
So just a quick question, because now I'm I'm not as well versed in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre universe as you are, but I always thought or understood it that he is also like the oldest brother, that they're all.
I wasn't sure between the first one and the second one. Because I didn't know where Chop Top fell in, if he was the kid or not. I'd have to, and I should know that stuff, if Chop Top was Drayton Sawyer's kid. You know, you might be right. He might be the oldest brother. But he acts as the father character, Now I'm trying to just dig. I'm trying to dig myself out of a hole here. He acts as the, but then why would they call him Grandpa?
Yeah, that's
they,
a good
yeah,
question.
They would all just call him Dad. Yeah, unless they had another Grandpa. Father who was killed. Now you got me so interested in this.
We need to look up the Sawyer family's
family tree. yeah, because that's because I always thought that Drayton was the father character. But let's see. Okay. I don't know. I'm trying to. So the Sawyer family, Wiki. Drayton Sawyer is the cook and the father of Jedediah Nubbins and Chop Top. Okay, so he was Chop Top's dad, which is, and then so, Nubbins was the hitchhiker who was, so Drayton was his dad as well. He was the
okay, father. So what's really, are you on the Wikipedia page or?
I'm on the Texas Chainsaw Wiki.
Okay, I'm there too. And for me, it says Drayton Sawyer, the cook and the oldest of the four brothers.
That is so weird. Well, I'm on the, it says textchainsawmassacre.fandom.com.
Yeah, and then I'm on the Sawyer family.
Okay, yeah, and it says start a wiki, and I'm looking right here. Its members include Drayton Sawyer, the cook and the father of Jedediah Nubbins, Jedediah Nubbins and Chop Top. And so they're listing Jedediah as Leatherface, which would be weird because if you go into the remake, Jedediah was a little kid at the time. And he's like, what are you?
So it's kind of weird because they have this different versions on the same wiki. Because yeah, if you go to the Sawyer family, that's its own things. Then it says this Sawyer family is a cannibalistic family in the first of the many Texas Chainsaw Massacre timelines. Its members include Drayton Sawyer, the cook and the oldest of the four brothers; Nubbins Sawyer, one of the two middle brothers, also known as the hitchhiker; Top Sawyer, Nubbins' twin brother and the Vietnam soldier.
But again, why would they? Yeah, but again, why would they call him Grandpa? Is what I don't understand. Like, if they would all just be calling him Dad, unless it was, you know, a weird nickname of sorts. Like, you just call your dad Grandpa.
Yeah, or he is the grandpa, and the actual parents are gone.
Right, but that seems like a lot of lore that would have to be written in that I don't think Hooper was worried about when he was making Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, but I love that on the same wiki there's...
I know.
There's two versions where it says... It's even the same. It also starts with the cook then either oldest brother or father. So that's...
And the... I'm looking at the actual Wikipedia and it says at the top, this article may need to be rewritten entirely to comply with Wikipedia's quality standards. I don't know. I'm going to go with the fandom article and at least what's always been in my heart, and that he was that he was the dad, because Drayton, and he was so much older than at least the hitchhiker. He was so much older than the hitchhiker. Yeah, with Leatherface, it's kind of hard to tell because you don't ever but yeah, I've always seen him as the father character, and I'm going to go with he was the dad. I'm putting it down right here, International House Horrors Podcast. We're I'm calling it.
I think it's time for another Twitter survey.
Twitter poll to see if he was the dad or not. Yeah. I want to say he was the dad, man.
Because he was always just the oldest brother. They're all like brothers.
Yeah, but again, why would they call him? Why would they call him Grandpa?
In general, the whole family is fucked up, and it doesn't matter if you take the grandpa, the oldest brother as a father figure, as the we can talk about Texas Chainsaw.
Right. because we could go on and on. But he always, to me, he was, always the dad and kind of filled that role. And especially like, look what your brother did to the door. You know, he's kind of the patriarch character of this family, because Grandpa's just a mess. He's just shaky hand dropping the sledgehammer.
Yeah.
But I always liked him because he was funny at the same time. And he was one of the few that – he was really the only one in that family that I think could play both roles. He could – you know, we saw him in Chainsaw 2 going out to the chili cook-off, and he's accepting the award, and people in the community tend to really like him, whereas the hitchhiker is always a psychopath. Chop Top is always a psychopath, and Leatherface is always – Always leather.
Well, right. Leatherface is his own kind of
right
thing.
All right, what do you got next up on your list?
Yes, so since you just mentioned the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I got two movies that, at least from the father figures, I take in the same vein, in that it's fucked up father figures of the big family clan. Mm-hmm. And the other two versions I have is The Hills Have Eyes and The Frontiers.
Oh, yes.
Which both have, like, evil dads, but also, like, the whole family is just fucked up. And the father is just, like, the patriarch, the boss of the team.
Yeah, and, The Hills Have Eyes, they had the greatest names. The father is Jupiter, Papa Jupiter. And, he's leading this clan of mutated cannibals that live in the mountains. Res Frontiers, he was a Nazi, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The oldest Nazi professor, kind of.
Right, yeah. Still dressed up in his SS uniform. And
since we're just talking about it, I'm also going to put Hard Rock Zombies in there, where Hitler is actually the father of the family, and he's also a bad guy.
The Fruhrer. He was the father of everybody. But Hills Have Eyes and Frontiers, you're right. Hills Have Eyes, a little bit different because they were so mutated and grotesque, whereas Frontiers was more methodical. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah. I just put them in the same bunch together with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where it's all just like these big clans where everyone is kind of crazy. And the father figure is, even though he knows what he's doing, he's still crazy.
Right. Yeah, and it's both great movies and both killer dads. I like them both.
Yeah.
I would say I like The Hills Have Eyes a little bit more. And again, they had a really weird family dynamic in that movie, whereas Frontiers, it was everybody was an oddball character. You know, you had like two hookers, one giant, massive bodybuilder of a man. And it was kind of a weird amalgam of different character types. Whereas Hills Have Eyes, they were all just a family. They were just a really twisted, messed up family. And fathers knows best. And a lot of these movies, you know, the father dishes out the punishment at the same time as kind of putting the family on a specific path or direction he wants them to go. The next one I had up is one that you almost feel kind of bad for the father because you feel it's not really his fault, but he kind of gets taken over. Actually, the next two on my list, I guess you could almost put together. But the first one is 79's Amityville Horror. And James Brolin played that role. We're not going to talk about the Ryan Reynolds remake of this movie. But James Brolin played that role so well. Played opposite Margot Kidder, one of her better performances. Everybody remembers her for Superman, and I always think Black Christmas and Amityville. But he slowly gets possessed by these spirits. You know, the whole story, the Lutz family, they move into the house. I think everybody knows the Amityville story. We don't really need to talk about it. They move in. Yeah. Bunch of brutal murders that happened there, and now the house starts to come alive and almost take over members of the family. All these evil things start happening, and slowly but surely they're trying to take over, what was his name, George? Was it George Lutz?
George Lutz.
Yeah, and they're trying to take over George Lutz to get him to kill his family. And Brolin just absolutely nailed that role. Like, he was so creepy, and I love this stuff where you can see him actually, you know, fighting between the two, like where little bits of love and compassion would still come out. But then you get these other scenes where he's just completely taken over by these entities. And it's really good. That's a great one. And the one I was going to say goes kind of with that in the same token, came out the next year, 1980, Jack Torrance, The Shining, maybe one of the worst dads of all time. Cause he was a pretty bad dad before they even got there. He was trying to get better. But he had a little bit of a drinking problem, and, you know, Wendy keeps reminding him that he had broke Danny's arm at one time accidentally, had one too many beers. And but there's also a few bad dads in that. I guess you could count O'Grady was a terrible dad, you know, hacking up his twin daughters. What does he keep saying? I had to correct them, sir. I had to correct them. And that's how you correct somebody, is with an axe. But The Shining is probably the most, I would say, probably the most famous of all horror dads.
Yeah.
Jack Torrance.
He's the one that you think of when you think of, killer dads.
He was the first one that came to mind.
Yeah, he doesn't kill that many people in the movies, you gotta say. He's only killing one.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because he only ever killed Scatman Carruthers.
Yeah, and if you watch the read the book or watch the only version that Stephen King says is good,
the TV version.
Yeah, I think he kills no one because
because he hit him with a croquet mallet.
Yeah, but yeah, of course, Jack Torrance. He's the number one worst dad of all times. I'd say.
Yeah, the way he's chasing Danny around the labyrinth in the snow. Yeah, even if he didn't get to him, he was going, and he was ready to murder Wendy, and he was ready to kill Danny. He was ready to kill them both.
Yeah.
But again, you had someone possessed by, and we never really talked about it when I told you I'd listened to Dr. Sleep, but Stephen King mentions many, many times that those were ghosts and spirits in the Overlook Hotel.
Yeah, of course, in Stephen King's version. We're talking about Kubrick's version, which Stephen King said he doesn't like it, and it's all wrong.
Oh, so, okay. All right, that's your defense.
Yeah, that doesn't come this way. So anyway, before this gets too heated, let's jump to the next movie I have on here, which is The Loved Ones, which already forgot again if you've seen it or not. But in The Loved Ones, it's this... it's about this crazy girl, Princess, and her daddy. And they have their own little prom night with a friend they found on the way and took with them. And they kind of torture him, try to lobotomize him. And as we... Slight spoilers, but this movie is not really about the twists. As they tried a few times before, and they have a whole basement full of lobotomized boyfriends of Princess.
Which is so bad.
Yeah, and also it's a loving family. Daddy and Princess, they dance, they almost kiss on the prom night.
Which is so
weird. It's a really fucked up movie.
Yeah, it's weird, man. It's really weird. And yes. Yeah, that's one of those ones that's uncomfortable in so many different ways. It's hard to even really articulate how it gets under your skin. But it is good.
He's a fucked up killer dad for sure.
Yeah. And the next one I have is a dad who, it's a movie I think we've talked about, not Mom and Dad, even though I guess we could talk about Mom and Dad. You could talk about Nicolas Cage.
I have written down Mom and Dad.
That's the one I'm bringing up next is Mom and Dad. Perry Benson plays this, this dad who is absolutely vile in the worst ways possible. You know, they kidnap this girl. She was what did she do? She worked at the airport. And
I think she cleaned the toilets at the airport. Something.
She cleaned the bathroom and then ends up hooking up with the son and daughter from this family. They go to the house and then they keep her and start first. They torture and rape her, which is terrible in and of itself. But I don't want to say exactly what happens, but we open like the first time you see the dad being truly disgusting, he's doing gross things with body parts like internal organs, which is it's real bad. It's real bad.
Yeah.
The movie's the movie's.
I have to
terrible.
Watch that movie again. I got it sitting on my shelf.
Yeah, but he is for anyone who's not seen it. It is much more on the extreme side of horror. It's not a typical run of the mill horror movie, and it's got one of the most disturbing Christmas mornings that you'll ever see. ever see. But he is the dad. He again kind of runs the family. Everybody listens to exactly what he says. And his is a weird one because they show him throughout the movie at work and out and about in the community, and he's kind of, you know, picked on and bullied by everyone. But then he gets into the home environment, and he's just this monster, just an absolute monster of a man.
Yeah.
It's a crazy movie. What's I was trying to pull up real quick to see. I can't remember what year that was. 2008. So it's
too long ago.
No, not an old movie.
Yeah, but one that's not seen much, like... not many people have seen it, or I haven't heard about it until you told me about it.
Yeah, it's pretty messed up. Pretty messed up little British horror flick.
Okay, so the next one I have is the last one. I've got lots more that I have more of like a discussion piece where we need to talk about if there are bad dads, killer dads. But I've got one more where it's clear. Just before we get too deep into it, I'm going to say this is a spoiler for Friday the 13th, part 5.
No, part what?
I'm pretty sure, okay. It's part 5 or part 4.
I was going to say I was going to say 5 and 6.
No, it's maybe we're talking about something different.
No. We're talking about A Nightmare on Elm Street. But yeah, 6 is the... Are you talking about Nightmare on Elm Street?
No, Friday the 13th.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So spoilers ahead. Skip ahead maybe a few minutes. It's not going to be long. But in Friday the 13th, part 5, Tommy Jarvis ends up in a mental institution after having witnessed Jason kill all his friends in the fourth movie. And in that mental institution,
it's not even really a mental institution, though. It's more of a reform, like a house. They just live like a farm.
True, right. That's true. Yeah, it's just... But it starts off with a brutal killing of a guy who really likes his chocolate bars.
Right.
And then suddenly, after Tommy gets there, Jason seems to be back killing people. And at the end of the movie, it turns out it wasn't Jason. It was actually the dad of the kid getting killed in the beginning.
Right.
And he was just acting out revenge. And that's one that people forget about.
Yeah, he had done it under the guise of Jason to try and get away with it because it would be easier. Exactly. And then we got a really weird ending to that where it looked like Tommy was going to be Jason. When he was in the hospital at the end, he had taken the mask on. But yeah, that one, and it was a very different mask too. It was a different mask. See, and I was thinking, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street 6 is when Freddy's kid ends up back at Elm Street. Once Springwood, Ohio had all but been abandoned. The only people there was Roseanne and Tom Arnold. And they end up back on Elm Street, and it's revealed that she was Freddy. That whole movie was just a weird gimmick, and it's not the best movie, but it's revealed that she is Freddy Kiggs. Yeah. But then you also had the Dream Child in Nightmare 5. That was the title of the movie. So you kind of had both of those. But yeah, to think of Freddy being a dad is really weird. It's just a weird idea.
That's the first one I've written down for discussion value.
Oh, okay.
If Freddy is a bad dad. Because I think, at least for us to talk about bad fathers, it has to be some sort of father-daughter relationship and not just after 6 movies, it turns out, oh, he also had kids. So...
Yeah, and that is a hard one to kind of nail down. But I would say it falls in. It works. You can definitely say he's a bad dad. And we'll get into that a little bit more. I've just got one more that I want to bring up because the whole movie's about this guy. Be all the movies. The Stepfather. I don't know if you've ever seen The Stepfather.
I haven't seen either versions of it.
Yeah. Well, there's actually a bunch of sequels. I think there was like three or four in the original run, which I had watched them all. They were all on Prime. And I'd seen the first one, but I hadn't seen any of the sequels. And by the end of it, he's getting weird plastic surgery and, you know, he's the same guy, but not. He's got a different face on. But he's another one that plays really well. In the original Stepfather, he was trying to, like, in his mind, he needed this Leave It to Beaver type perfect family. And whenever that didn't work out, he would just kill everybody and move on to a new town, new name, new face, try and have a new family. But they made a whole bunch of sequels to it, which got progressively worse. And then the remake, I don't think I've ever seen. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen the remake. I don't know that I've ever seen it, if it's any good or not.
I have only available over here the remake, and I kind of want to watch the original first before I get into the remake. So
yeah, check out the original for sure. It's a it's a good one. And then a couple of mentions I got on there: People Under the Stairs. He's a really weird dad.
I haven't seen that one either yet.
Oh, man, you got to see People Under the Stairs. So good. Frailty. Bill Paxton is a really good one, but with that one, you don't know if he's really a bad dad or not. That could be debated because the whole movie, I don't want to spoil any of the movies, so I'm just going to kind of leave it at that, but it could be very much debated. And then 28 Weeks Later, he ends up being a pretty horrible dad. Like, he's just completely incompetent. And he's not a bad dad in that he's really killing everybody, but he ends up killing everybody, you know, gets the virus. So anyways, that's what I had. So why don't you go on to some of your ones that are up for debate and we can talk through them.
Yeah, well, I've got one. He isn't a killer dad, so I have him kind of on the outside. It's Jean Pritchett is his name in The Woman. I don't know if you've seen that movie by Lucky McKee.
No, I haven't seen that.
I think it's based on a Jack Ketchum novel, and he's always like kind of fucked up. And so The Woman is about this guy, our main character, Jean Pritchett. He finds a woman in the woods somewhere. And she's like totally, she's wild. She lived there forever. She can't even speak normally, I think. And he kind of just takes her with him and chains her down in his yard house. And then kind of like uses her and tortures her. And
I've seen it. I've seen the advertisements for it. I've just never watched it. But now you got me more interested to check it out.
It's really good. And I like the director, Lucky McKee. He also made May.
Oh, I like May.
Yeah, and that's the same director. And he hasn't made much since. I think he made May, then some episode of what's it called? The big director's thing.
Masters of Horror. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think he made All Cheerleaders Must Die and then The Woman in 2013, I think. So... yeah, but that movie is fun and worth checking out for sure. I got it on Blu-ray, actually.
Oh, right on.
But so he's not a killer in that sense. Like, he's not going around killing all the people.
But he's like still a psychopath.
Talked about. But yeah, he's crazy.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like Nell, the Jodie Foster movie, where she's just living in the woods. Tay in the wind.
I haven't seen
once now, I think she won an Academy Award for it. It was her and Liam Neeson played her doctor. It wasn't a horror movie at all. But you have this character who lived in the woods and could like spoke her own language, and they were trying to. There's a lot of people trying to reform her, but they also wanted to let her be a wild person.
Okay, it sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's a good movie. Not like
horror. Yeah. Then I got one written down here. Where I just decided I'm going to write them down and just ask you about it. I've got Frankenstein on here.
Yeah.
I
kind of debated that one for a little bit.
Yeah. He's not a father and he isn't a killer. Also, he's not a father in the original sense, but he made life. And in other movies, he's kind of crazy, especially not Frankenstein himself, but Dr.
Victor Frankenstein.
No, I mean the guy from the second movie who's actually a mad scientist.
Oh, yes. Yes. But you're right, though. He wasn't – I don't know, man. That's such a tough one because I don't know if I would ever classify, you know, a scientist. I mean, they created life, but does that count? Does that make you a father figure?
Yeah.
Is where it's hard.
That's the question, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's more work to become a father that way than the normal way.
Right, and a lot less fun.
Although he seemed pretty healthy when Frankenstein once lifted his hand.
That is true. I mean, I guess you would be probably pretty euphoric if all of a sudden your science experiment went right.
Yeah, but else on the list, I got Clown from 2000. Is it 13? It's produced by Eli Roth, I think, but not directed.
Yeah, he produced it.
Yeah, where the father of a child puts on the clown costume and then gets taken over by the evil clown spirit and starts running amok. He's not an evil father. He's just taken over by a monster. So that's why I kind of took him out, but...
But I think he would still count because it still makes you a killer dad. Yeah. You know, even though you're taken the same way Amityville or The Shining, you know, it was something different that invaded them. It was almost an invasive species that took them over. But with Clown, I wasn't a huge fan of Clown. I don't mind Clown. There's Stitches, that one you had sent me, I like a lot more.
Yeah, Stitches is much more fun.
It's a lot more fun. Clown had some great effects, though, like him trying to pull that nose off and, you know, like ripping his flesh and all this stuff's coming off with it.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah.
And Peter Stormare was so good in that. I always enjoy Peter Stormare no matter what he's in.
Yeah, he's good. Then I got one that's really up for debate if he's a killer. But I put Pet Sematary on there with Lewis Creed.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't do anything evil, or, well, maybe at the very end. But in general, he is the reason everything bad happens. He puts he digs his kid back up and puts him down on the in the cemetery to then come back and kill lots of people. And then again, slight spoilers for Pet Sematary. He also decides, even though his kid went around and killed lots of people, in the end he decides to bring back his wife because So he's not evil in the original sense or killer, but I'd say he deserves an honorable mention. Honorable mention, maybe. Yeah.
Or you could just blame Judd for all of it, since he's the one who told him about it. Like, hey, yeah, your daughter loved that cat, didn't she? Didn't she, Lewis? Oh, she loved him. That's got a secret. But it was really, I mean, you've read that book, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so in the book, they deal a lot more with how once you've been there once, once you do it, because Judd buried his dog there, once you do it, the cemetery's always trying to bring you back, even almost against your will. Like, it's always trying to get you to put more into the Mi'kmaq burial ground. And I think that's, you know, that's a big piece that they left out. And so, because I feel like in the book they even described it somewhere, Judd, he knew he didn't want to go there, but he was still, once he started on that path, he did want to go. Like, he was being drawn back into the cemetery.
It's been a long time since I've read the book, but I remember something like that as well. There was more to it than just he's going to bury him. And
right.
Yeah. But in the movie, we just have that. So I put him down here as like, he's not really a killer, but he's,
kind of a killer.
Yeah, exactly. And that's pretty much the last one I have. I thought about looking up great dads, but then I decided not to.
Yeah, there's some good dads out there in horror. Maybe we'll do that next Father's Day. We'll do that a year from now. We'll actually go back and look at the good dads. And there was, you know, some other ones I had thought of. House of the Devil. He was a... he was a pretty scumbaggy dad whenever you're...
What's it called?
Captain
House of the Thousand Corpses.
Yeah, Captain Spaulding. How did we not even mention Captain Spaulding? He's one of the worst. He's one of the worst.
Yeah, in House of the Thousand Corpses, and then even more prominent in Devil's Rejects, where he's actually with his family.
Yeah. Because in House of a Thousand Corpses, you only ever really see him at the beginning of the movie, and then when he picks the at the end of the movie, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's at the beginning and showing them around in his house, and then at the very end he comes in as well. But he's mostly absent, and in the second one he's like the leading character. He's like,
yeah. What's wrong, kid? Don't you like clowns? Don't you think we're fucking funny? that's a good one. And did you see the little trailer for Three from Hell? The little teaser?
No, I didn't. Is it out now?
Yeah, but it's a true teaser. It opens up and it's, you know, first you had House of a Thousand Corpses, then you had The Devil's Rejects, and I think we only got one little snippet of new footage. And he said the new trailer should be coming sometime, I want to say in July, and the movie, though, I want to say he said September is when we're actually going to get the movie.
Lots of people don't like him, but I'm still a big fan of his movies.
Yeah. He's let me down a lot of times, but I still go and watch his movies. I'll always go and watch his movies.
Especially if he once again brings Sid Haig back. He's always...
Yeah, all three of them are going to be back. And there were people asking him questions, like, is Captain Spaulding going to be there? And when he first announced the movie, not long after, he put out the mugshot pictures of all three of them. I was like, well, I'm pretty sure he's going to be there if he's promoting with his image. Yeah, all of Rob Zombie's, a lot of his key players are back. You know, he likes to use a lot of the same actors,
yeah,
which is really cool. And those, I mean, Rejects is my favorite of anything he has done. I think it was just, that's a great movie.
Yeah, it's just lots of fun. I also really like House of the Thousand Corpses.
Yeah.
But the rest, yeah, the rest, they aren't, I'd say none of them are really just like bad. Like there's always something there that makes me kind of enjoy them. Like, yeah, the Halloween remake, the 31, I think, was just lots of fun. It wasn't a good movie, but it was fun. No,
I like the little Spanish-speaking Nazi small person. That's such a weird thing.
I totally forgot about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And Lords of Salem, I'll give him credit. It was his best shot movie. Like, it was the best-looking movie that he's ever done. But I think part of the problem is, and nothing against Sherry Moon Zombie, but she's a fine actress, but she doesn't have a huge range. And so it's hard because he's always putting her in these leading roles. And I'm like, man, it's just, you know, you're losing something there. But I guess if it was my wife, she's probably like, you're putting me in your movie. You better put me in your fucking movie, Rob. So I might, I'd probably do the same thing.
Yeah, probably.
All right. So that's our Father's Day episode. All the good dads out there. I really can't believe we forgot Captain Spaulding because he is such
we remembered him at the end.
He's such a good one. And if you want to get into contact with us, IHOH Podcast on all the social media platforms and IHOHpodcast@gmail.com. You can send us a message. If we forgot any of your favorite killer dads, let us know who's the good ones. And to all the dads out there, happy Father's Day. Enjoy some time with your kiddos. And yes, use it to your advantage. Just tell them, yes, it's Father's Day. You got to do whatever I say.
Let's watch Halloween.
Right. I actually turned it on. I was watching it on. Oh, we didn't even mention that Terrifier 2 was announced, which is exciting. I'm so excited for more Art the Clown. I watched it on VHS the other night. Will had sent me a copy of it on VHS, which was just the greatest gift anyone could ever receive. And they had the opening of the movie. They actually had an interview with him. What's his name? David Howard Thornton.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But he was talking about it. It was so funny, man. Cause you see him as this crazy Art the Clown character and he's doing this little quick intro to the movie in his house. And he's got a detective or he's got a Pikachu hat on the wall behind him. And he's like, that's just who I am. He's like, it's just what I like. But Terrifier 2, and they're saying they're up in the ante. It's going to be so much crazier. And I'm like, oh man, I just cannot wait. Cannot wait.
Yeah. And it's by the exact same team, like same director, he wrote it and directed it again. So
yeah, it's going to be good. Awesome. It's going to be good. All right. For the International House of Horrors, I've been Joe Merle.
And I've been Josh.
And we'll be back next week with more things terrible, horrible, brutal, bloody, gory, and the macabre.